Welcome to KUOI News for October 26th. KUOI News is the official news broadcast of UI Student Media and the Argonaut. Today in news, Katie Sword has a story about University of Idaho enrollment, Allison Griffith has a feature on the Moscow Farmers Market, and Britt Kaiser has a story about university course withdrawal petitions. In sports, Madison McCord has a preview of this weekend's soccer matchup. Stefan Wiebe has a preview of the weekend cross-country meet, and Sean Kramer has a feature on interim head football coach Jason Gesser. For the editorial board, Chloe Rambo gives her view on pay equality. Columnist Caitlin Maroney will discuss her view of Christianity and gives her reasons for leaving the church. This week in RAR, Molly Spencer has a feature on the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which played recently in Moscow. But first, here's Katie Sword.
University of Idaho Fall 2012 enrollment numbers released October 18th showed little growth. Freshman enrollment is at 1,633 compared to 1,631 in Fall 2011. Overall enrollment is 12,493, up from 12,313 in the previous year. However, the method of measuring enrollment has been altered in accordance with the Idaho State Board of Education's new reporting guidelines. President M. Dwayne Nellis said in an email, if the reporting methods had been the same as last year, total enrollment would be 13,081. UI Media Relations said UI Provost of Academic Affairs Doug Baker was not available for comment on enrollment numbers. Steve Neheisel, Assistant Vice President for Enrollment Management, said the State Board's change established guidelines for the university to follow when reporting enrollment numbers. He said prior to the October 15th change, there weren't any guidelines, so there was some flexibility with reporting. He said the board clarified who should be in the count. The simplest example, he said, was to look at study abroad students. Study abroad students are kept in the books and active, he said, but technically they aren't at University of Idaho, so they are no longer counted. Marilyn Whitney, Idaho State Board of Education Communications Officer, said these changes in reporting occurred for several reasons. These are really just snapshot days. What the snapshot does is it gives us a sense of the trend of enrollment, Whitney said. The reasons for change have to do with other reporting requirements. She said the new October 15th date is in line with the date when the Integrated Post-Secondary Education Data System collects information, a government agency that collects required enrollment numbers nationwide. Whitney said this allows for consistency in reporting. It also allows us to capture late start students and dual enrollment students, she said. The later reporting date may have allowed for a more accurate snapshot, but the numbers show University of Idaho is not on track to reach Nellis's declared enrollment goal of 16,000 students in 2020. Although there are some bright spots in these numbers, this enrollment growth is not where we need to be, Nellis said in an email to University of Idaho faculty and staff. We did not achieve our goals in several areas, and there is much work to do. The growth in the freshman class was 0.1%, with total enrollment growing 1.4%. To reach Nellis's goal, the university enrollment needs to increase by 750 students for the next 4 years, a little more than four times the amount of growth seen this year. Neheisel said the University of Idaho does need to grow more on the freshman side. He said it's the president's vision and he's not one to question that, so he thinks we need to keep working in that direction. He said the University of Idaho has expanded enrollment efforts, which include a recruiter in California and one in Southern Idaho, specifically on the College of Southern Idaho campus. He said they really have to increase their efforts, and with the new initiatives, plan to see an increase in enrollment next year. Neheisel said another issue causing slow enrollment growth has been the changes in financial aid, specifically the elimination of the Western Undergraduate Exchange Program. He said it has taken some time for prospective students to understand the changes. Neheisel said it has helped the University of Idaho, but not enrollment numbers. For KUI News, I'm Katie Sword.
Now here's Allison Griffith with her story on the Moscow Farmers Market.
For the past 35 years, Moscow has had a farmers market that brings the community together in a social atmosphere while providing fresh regional produce and crafts. As a way to celebrate those 35 years, the city is now looking at ways to make the Moscow Farmers Market the best version it can be, said Jen Piffner, assistant to the city supervisor. We like to think of it as, what is the market like when it grows up, she said. The process of improving the market stems from the city receiving the Rural Business Enterprise Grant from the United States Department of Agriculture, a $15,000 grant, while the city also contributed $5,000, she said. The market provides that rich quality of life and community in Moscow. To keep the community aspect that the market brings, the city is involving the community in every step of the way, Piffner said. To improve the market, the city has hired Aaron Zarteski, principal with Public Market Development, as a consultant for the project. He has an incredible amount of experience with farmers and public markets, she said. One aspect to make the market better is to look at having an indoor-outdoor market year-round, Zarteski said in his proposal. they are having a meeting open to the public at 6 p.m. October 29th, where they will hear what people think about the market now and where it can go in the future, she said. She also said that if people cannot make it to the meetings but still want to contribute to the strategic plan, they can voice their thoughts via email. Pifner said that they really hope that people in the community come out, and not just people that come to the market and are vendors of the market, but students, other community members, and business owners, too. They would love to talk to them. For KUOI News, this is Allison Griffith.
With the ad drop deadline for classes much sooner than usual, the number of ad drop petitions increased significantly this year. Britt Kaiser has the story.
The new August 31st deadline to add or drop classes threw the entire university for a loop, especially the University of Idaho Academic Petitions Committee, said Becky Talent, committee chair. The group processed 193 petitions in the first 7 weeks of the semester. Of the 193 petitions, there were 93 cases to add a class and 23 to drop a class after the deadline. The average for this time of year is typically 75 to 80 petitions, according to a report Talent presented to the Faculty Senate. Talent said it was a perfect storm situation. You had the deadline happening on the Friday people were leaving for Labor Day, and there were a lot of students unaware of the deadline that was truly much earlier than normal, Talent said. It was just bizarre in so many ways. Students petitioned for a number of reasons. Some wished to return to school, while others looked to add or withdraw from a class after the deadline. UI Registrar Nancy Crow said the increase in petitions was expected, and this is one of the most publicized date changes the registrar's office has had. When you make a change to something at the university, it takes a little while for everybody to know that this has changed, she said. Crow said her office put signs up about the change deadlines, had table tents, emailed students, put notifications on Vandal Web, enlisted the help of student accounts, and communicated with faculty members and advisors. Talent said the registrar's office did everything it could, but the timing of the change is what might have affected petition members. Crow said there's been discussion on campus about shortening the ad drop deadline for more than 3 years, but the decision was finalized last spring. In order for the policy to pass, it first went to the University Curriculum Committee, then through the Faculty Senate, and was approved by the faculty. Crow said the idea behind the new deadline is to allow students to take care of adding or dropping courses online. The policy states students can add a class online for up to 6 days into the semester. Instructor permission is required days 6 through 10, and students must petition from then on. Crow said the university faculty governance agreed the sooner students are committed to the courses they need for the semester, the better off they are. The Academic Petitions Committee meets every Thursday, and Talent said the group feels rushed this semester because it's difficult to consider 60-plus petitions in 2.5 hours. I don't think we made any bad decisions, but we would have liked to have been able to chew it around and discuss it a little bit more. Make sure that we covered all the angles, Talent said. And if we erred on the side of caution. The registrar's office is confident the number of petitions will decrease slightly in the spring and decrease significantly next fall, Crow said. Talent said she encourages students to make changes in their schedules early on. For KUOI News, I'm Britt Kaiser.
Now in sports, here's Madison McCord. The Vandal women's soccer team celebrates the careers of 10 seniors this weekend.
For the final time in their collegiate careers Sunday, 10 girls will step on the pitch together as Vandals in front of a home crowd. From goalkeeper to forward, the seniors on the Idaho soccer team occupy positions vital to the side's success both on and off the pitch. Though they may have come from different backgrounds and will move on to live different lives, these Vandals will all be able to tell the same story of soccer success. Some of the names and faces are familiar to even the casual fan, while others have struggled to find playing time at Idaho. Three girls have started every match since joining the program, while one is a fifth-year player recovering from a broken leg last season. Liz Boyden, a senior goalkeeper from Spokane, didn't join the Vandals in the same class as the other players. Instead, she came the season before. Her plans to finish her Idaho career last season were quickly derailed when she suffered a broken leg in the third match of the year. For Boyden, this led to her taking a medical redshirt and returning this year. Boyden said it wasn't until this season that she really felt connected with a group of teammates. the Wolfpack, as they call themselves. I was never really close to the Wolfpack until this year, because usually classes are closer with each other. However, they kind of took me under their wing this year, since I was the lone fifth-year senior, and it's been great. I feel like I'm part of a family, Boyden said. If this group is indeed a Wolfpack, then forward Chelsea Small may just be their leader. Since stepping on the pitch at Guywick's Field as a freshman, Small, along with fellow seniors Megan Lopez and Jill Flockhart, have started all 80 matches the Vandals have played. Small, Idaho's career leader in goals scored, said it doesn't matter how often the girls have played in a match or practiced together, they are always going to be best friends. I've just learned how to be a really good friend. These girls are my best friends. They treat me like the world and have shown me what a great friend is like, Small said. They're the types of friends I'll talk with the rest of my life, and I didn't really expect to find 10 and even more of those people coming to college. Although all of the girls have had 4 years to create a bond they now have, some brought a friendship with them to Idaho. Spokane natives Boyden, Lauren Layton, and Erica Hart grew up playing with and against each other. The same could be said for defenders Christine Leatham and Cassandra San, who played with one another in the Vancouver, British Columbia region. Leatham said one of the more special moments she expects to come Sunday is a visit from her father, who is making the trip down for Senior Day. It's really exciting. My dad hasn't come to a lot of the games because it's so far, Leatham said. He saw me play all through club, but hasn't really seen me play through university, especially where I'm playing at a different position, so it'll probably be different for him, but I think he's excited, and I'm really excited too. With different players moving in and out of the program, winning and losing seasons, one thing has stayed consistent for this group of seniors, the leadership of Coach Pete Scholler. Boyden said the line is blurred sometimes between playing for and being friends with Scholler. Pete and I, there's a friend level and a coach level, so it's easy to talk to him, Boyden said. He's always open. He has an open door policy, and I've never been afraid to just go in and talk to him about anything. I feel like he takes whatever I have to say to heart, and that means a lot to me. With only 2 matches remaining in the regular season for Idaho, 1 victory is needed to secure a place in the WAC tournament, which takes place November 1st through 4th in Logan, Utah. Idaho's first shot will come at 3 p.m. Friday at Guywick's Field as they take on undefeated number 28 Denver before facing last place New Mexico State at 1 p.m. Sunday. Small said she is viewing this weekend's homestand as both a challenge and a celebration for the seniors who know that the work needs to be done to secure a tournament berth. But she is excited to be fighting for that spot in front of her own fans. Fans she'll miss as her college career winds down. I'm going to miss the excitement. Our fans here are all getting ready together, being at our field, and knowing that we have a big game. Knowing that we're going to perform and take home a big win, Small said. Walking onto the field for the first time as a freshman to leaving it for the last time as a senior is a full circle experience, according to Leatham, who said that it's not only her skill, but passion that has improved in her time at Idaho. I've definitely grown as a player. I've learned so much from the team and Pete. I've become more open with people and more patient, Leatham said. I've just refound the love for the game. For KUI News, I'm Madison McCord.
Now here's Stefan Wiebe with a preview of this weekend's cross-country matchup.
Going for their third straight title, the Vandal cross-country women have high hopes this weekend as they set to run in the 2012 WAC Championships Saturday in Reston, Louisiana. Idaho goes into the meet as the heavy favorite after being voted number one in the pre-championship women's cross-country coaches poll and returning 4 of their top 5 runners from last year's championship team. Idaho has not won 3 consecutive championships in any sport since the volleyball team won 3 in a row from 1993 to 1995 in the Big Sky Conference. The feat has not been accomplished in any sport since the Vandals joined the WAC. Idaho's 4 veteran runners, juniors Hannah Kaiser, Alicia Butterworth, Emily Paradis, and Holly Stanton, came in with low expectations as freshmen in what was supposed to be a rebuilding year for the Vandals. Instead, Idaho shocked the WAC and took home the 2010 WAC Championship trophy. The following year, the Vandals dominated the WAC again, going into the championship as the favorites in 2011, a year where Kaiser was undefeated against collegiate competition until her second place finish in the championship meet. This week, the 4 veteran runners are upperclassmen with experience. They know what it's like to win. The Vandal expected to fill the 5th scoring position for Idaho is freshman Haley Rowdenbush, who had a strong showing at the Inland Northwest Championships for Idaho. New Mexico State is the team most likely to challenge the Vandals for the WAC crown. The Aggies were voted number 2 in the WAC in the pre-championship women's cross-country coaches poll, finishing just 3 points behind the Vandals. New Mexico State finished second in the 2011 WAC Championship, and Aggie junior, now senior, Courtney Schultz was the only runner to beat Kaiser in 2011. But if Idaho or New Mexico State stumbles, any of the other seven WAC schools could pick up the slack. As usual, the team strategy for the veteran runners is to stay up near the front and then make their moves near the end. For KUI News, I'm Stefan Wiebe.
Finally in sports, here's Sean Kramer with a feature of interim head football coach Jason Gesser.
10 years ago, 10 miles to the west, Jason Gesser became legend. In 2002, the former Washington State quarterback led the program to its second Rose Bowl appearance in the five-year period. Now, Gesser has an opportunity to make his mark on the other side of the Palouse. Last week, the 33-year-old offensive coordinator of Idaho was named interim coach when the school decided to terminate Rob Akey's contract mid-season. It's an opportunity Gesser seems to not be taking lightly. Gesser said it's been implied he is a candidate for the full-time job. Impressing athletic director Rob Spear enough for the full-time gig to be handed to him may prove to be difficult. Gesser is just in his second full year of being on a college coaching staff, and on top of that, three of Idaho's final four opponents are teams with winning records, all likely to be playing in bowl games. Adversity is nothing new to the former quarterback. In 2002, Gesser suffered a leg injury in Washington State's loss in the annual Apple Cup game with rival Washington. 2 weeks later, he hobbled onto the field at UCLA with a brace on his knee and led Washington State to the Pac-10 clinching victory over the Bruins. "There's no way that anyone can keep me out of the Rose Bowl," he told the Associated Press that night after the victory. His mindset is similar, knowing his present situation is a similar type of challenge, taking the reins of the injured psyche of Idaho football. That turnaround may not happen right away. Idaho's next game comes against 5-2 San Jose State, which had just thrashed Texas San Antonio last week. Back in his playing days at Washington State, that turnaround didn't happen right away either. Washington State went 4-7 Gesser's first year as the full-time starter in 2000, including a loss to Idaho at Martin Stadium. The Cougars went on to lose only 5 games combined the next 2 seasons with Jason Gesser under center. In the coming weeks, Gesser will expect, or at least hope, that leaders on the team will find a way to break through metaphorical walls so that the rest of the team can follow. That proverbial charge began Wednesday when Idaho practiced for the first time since Icky was dismissed. Wednesday's practice, closed to the public, was a light practice, Gesser said. But yesterday, Idaho held an open practice which featured a scout bowl in which the younger players scrimmaged and the upperclassmen calling the plays. Gesser said it would be a fun way for the team to come together during practice. For KUOI News, this is Sean Kramer.
For the editorial board, here's Chloe Rambo with this week's Our View.
Abraham Lincoln said, "You can have anything you want if you want it badly enough. You can be anything you want to be, do anything you set out to accomplish if you hold on to that desire." Sure, Lincoln had the right idea. We have the power to achieve anything we want. But what about when factors we can't control, such as our gender, prevent us from getting what we want no matter how much we desire it? A study released Wednesday by the American Association of University Women found that women working full-time were paid 82% as much as their male counterparts 1 year after graduating college and finding a job in their chosen career. Despite the fight for suffrage and control over reproductive rights, women are still discriminated against today. This discrimination is evident in the workplace, even among males and females with identical college degrees. The gender pay gap gets larger in proportion to the level of college degree, according to information compiled by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics in December 2011. With a bachelor's degree, a female will earn only 77% of what a male with the same degree will earn. A master's degree offers only 76%, while a professional degree or certificate is even more disturbing. Females only receive 72% of the same income men do. The study found that out of the 50 states, Idaho ranks 42nd in terms of pay equality. In our state, women with full-time jobs are only making an average of 75% of what men are paid. The obvious gender gap in pay isn't dependent on the career choices of men and women. The AAUW formulated a study in 2007 that focused on the presence of the gender gap directly after college graduation. The study, called Behind the Pay Gap, compared earning amounts for female and male graduates 1 year after their college graduation and compared them again 10 years after graduation. The study found that 1 year after graduation, women are paid 80% of what men are. 10 years after graduation, females only rake in 69% of what men do. In spite of legislation such as the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act of 2009, the gender pay gap is a continuing issue. Combating this irrefutable difference takes more than a suit of armor and a pair of combat boots. It takes a voice. It's not okay to get paid less for a job a woman deserves just as much as any male counterpart. Supporting the fight for gender pay equality does more than shoot a few extra bucks to the females you work in with the office, at the worksite, or in the classroom. Speaking up for gender pay equality is supporting your wife, your sister, your mother, or even your daughter. Establishing equal pay is establishing equal worth, and a fair paycheck is something everyone deserves.
For KUOI News and the Argonaut Editorial Board, that was Chloe Rambo. Now here's columnist Caitlin Maroney with her opinion on Christianity and the acceptance of everyone.
Hi, my name is Caitlin, and someday I'm going to die. When I do, I want to leave behind a world where I've been the best person I can be. I want to have more family and friends around me than I can count. I want people to remember me as loving, caring, and accepting. I don't want to be remembered as a Christian. I was raised as a Christian my entire young life, and not in the go to church on major holidays and for an occasional funeral kind of way. I went to church at least twice a week, and my entire family was actively involved in every aspect of church function. I've been involved with and attended many churches across the U.S. as my family moved around. I've seen it all, and quite frankly, I can't stand the thought of seeing any more. The Christian church is so concerned with getting themselves and everyone else they see into heaven, they often do so at the cost of relationships. They are so concerned with eternal life, they forget they have an equally, if not more, important life to live here on earth. A recent Pew Research study found that for the first time in recorded history, Protestants are the minority in this country. At the same time, the number of those who consider themselves religiously unaffiliated is at an all-time high. Why is this? The Barna Group conducted a research project comprised of 8 national studies that assessed the reasons young people, such as myself, leave the church. 1/5 said, the church is like a country club, only for insiders, while another 25% said, Christians demonize everything outside of the church. I've lost countless friendships and family relationships because I decided I didn't agree with one or more aspect of Christian theology. I'm the worst kind of non-Christian, a former one. I know the intricacies of Christian theology and I choose to reject it, and I have friends and family who have in turn rejected me because of that. Which is to say, every single one of those people put their doctrine and dogma before their relationships, and they don't seem to care one bit. Their treasures are in heaven, and so the fact that they might miss out on a few relationships here and there doesn't seem to bother them. Let's say you are a Christian who alienates yourself from people who don't view the world the same way you do. They might have different religious views, or maybe they just like chocolate cake and you don't. It doesn't matter if they are family or close friends, you don't want to be in a relationship with people who might lead you astray, or who don't have God in their lives. You do all of this to keep yourself pure, keep yourself focused on achieving the ultimate goal as a Christian, eternal life. Then you die, and none of it turns out to be real. God doesn't exist, you just turn into worm food. The end. But you've left behind a wake of destroyed relationships, devastated family members, and demolished lives. That, then, is the legacy you leave. That is your eternal life and the way you will be remembered among the rest of us. It makes no sense for Christians to be so exclusive. Why can't Christians be Christians and also be loving and inclusive of those around them, whether they believe the same or not? Why can't we focus on developing relationships with people rather than being sure they get to heaven? And if they decide they don't want to be saved, why does that give us the right to suddenly treat them with disdain and ostracize them? Please, for the love of all that is good, we need to stop focusing on what comes next and start appreciating what we have right now in this life. There is no need to trample everyone else while on the road to eternity. This has been Caitlin Maroney with KOUI News.
Last on today's show, here's Molly Spencer with a story about the cult classic Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Have you experienced the Rocky Horror Picture Show? Jerry Schutz, president of Sirius Entertainment, began hosting the Rocky Horror Picture Show experience in 2002. Schutz said his involvement has been recruiting and loving everything about the experience. This is one of those shows that, well, let's face it, "It's not a wonderful movie by any stretch of the imagination," he said. Each show held at the Kenworthy differs throughout the night. The 7 p.m. show starts out small and mild. The 9:30 p.m. show is a little more risque. And once midnight rolls around, the cast goes all out. Schutz said what makes the movie fun is the audience participation. Rocky Horror gives Sirius Entertainment, a nonprofit organization, a chance to not only raise money for themselves, but they also donate the money made to other nonprofit organizations. Last March, Sirius Entertainment was able to give $500 back to Moscow Mardi Gras, a youth-oriented program that provides scholarships for young people. Chess's favorite part about the experience this year was the new crop of Rocky Horror virgins, and its helpers. For each staff member, the Rocky Horror Show experience is a labor of love. All of the work they do is volunteer work. In theatrical production, actors and actresses do about one play in. The Rocky Horror staff turns around and does three shows a night, two nights in a row. That means they have six shows under their belt. In the past, Sirius Entertainment was able to do the show with an entire shadow cast. But since Schutz had a heart attack, he has not been able to put a cast back together. Because he works full-time and is a student at the University of Idaho, he hired Jessica Wessel to become president of the Rocky Horror Picture Show Society of the Palouse. Schutz said he wants to get back to having a live cast, a shadow cast, but in order to do that, he has to school enough individuals to learn the show so they can stand up during the movie and say their parts. The Rocky Horror Society is working on building a new crew for the show. Currently, there are only five cast members who know the shoutouts. Wessel has been in charge of everything from the Facebook page, putting prop bags together for shows, to messing with the Rocky Horror virgins. This year, seeing an increase in numbers has been the best part of the show for Wessel. It's a lot of fun to see people come in, even if it's their first show, ready to have fun. Wessel said she is also impressed with the number of people who dressed up this year, which all makes for a better, much more fun show. In March 2013, the Rocky Horror Society and Moscow Mardi Gras will team up again for the next Rocky Horror showing. To sign up for casting with Sirius Entertainment, go to siriusentertainment.org. You can also sign up for casting on the Rocky Horror Picture Show Society of the Palouse Facebook page. For KUOI News, I'm Molly Spencer.
This has been KUOI News for October 26th. KUOI News airs every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on KUOI FM 89.3. KUOI News is also available online at KUOI.org and UIArgonaut.com. Stay warm and enjoy this Halloween weekend. For KUOI News, I'm Caitlin Krasselt.